You're listening to Daily Paul Radio. Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. WGRR Digital.
Welcome, my friends, to this week's Blue Republican Radio with Robin Koerner, and I am very pleased again to be with my good friend Zach Carter. How are you doing, Zach?
Always fun to be on the radio with you. Better when we're hanging out in person, but I'll take this.
You'll take the radio. You know what? You were a bit silent there. The first sentence, I lost your first sentence, but I think I can hear you now. You're there, right? You're good.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So what have you been up to, mate?
Quite a bit. I've been, busy working with Ben Swan. I got a rifle donated to us, and we're giving it away. An AR-15 Sig Sauer. So, we've got a mainstream, well, formerly mainstream media journalist outlet, BenSwan.com, giving away this rifle. And I'm hoping that we can combine it with Ben's idea for a public bet that he announced today on his radio show. His bet is $25,000 to the guy running CNN if they gave Ben a spot on CNN, that he would double that spot's ratings in 30 days, and Ben wouldn't even take a salary. I would like to combine the bet with, we'll throw some Robin Koerner in there on CNN as well.
Now, which spot are we talking about?
With the gun giveaway, I think it's appropriate to shoot for Piers Morgan's spot.
So when you say to shoot for Piers Morgan's spot, I think a lot of listeners will be thinking, how about just shooting for Piers Morgan?
Yeah, we don't want to.
We don't want to do that.
Shooting people.
We're not into that, are we? No, we're not. We're non-aggression, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. I've got to say, Piers Morgan hasn't done much for the reputation of British Americans, those of us with that funny accent from across the pond, when it comes to talking about American politics. Yeah, he hasn't really paved the way for my efforts.
No, it's a stain.
Yes. And I know lots of Americans today, They want the Brits to take him back, but the Brits don't want him. They were pleased to get rid of him in the first place, I think.
Was he already unwanted when he left?
He left pretty much unwanted. A poor man. Yeah. Because this whole tabloid press thing in England, and there was the scandal with, they were tapping phones and invading people's privacy and all this kind of stuff. And it's became a huge, huge public issue the last year or two. And, I think he's peripherally related to all of that. So, yeah, people don't like him very much.
Well, maybe Canada will take him.
There you go. There's a few more English-speaking countries for him to try, isn't there?
Exactly.
Yeah, you've been doing good stuff. All right. Yeah. So what else have you been up to?
I co-manage a rock band now, so that's kind of new.
And everybody needs to know that you, Zach Carter, are the Forrest Gump of Liberty.
I feel more and more like the real Forrest Gump every day. So if anybody needs a rock band, this band called Golden State, I'll hook you up.
Love it. Anything else to plug? I mean, we may as well. Let's just go for it.
Closer to getting the Gray State film into production. Hope if all goes,
Tell us about that, because I'm sure a lot of my listeners don't know what that is.
Yeah, the Gray State film, it's a dark dystopian near future film project that kind of shows, you know, well, you know, it shows what's going to happen if people don't start listening to the Liberty crowd.
Okay.
In a very, you know, vivid and graphic way. You know, everything from, just watch the trailer. Go to graystatemovie.com. I can't do it justice.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to say, give us the URL for the trailer, because I remember, and it's a nicely produced trailer too, isn't it?
Yeah, it's sharp.
Yeah.
It's really sharp. And it's going to be a lot of fun to work on. I'm the film's media manager.
You are like the ubiquitous Liberty media manager. That's what you are.
Again, Forrest Gump.
That's right. I love it. Oh, you've been doing more exciting things than I have then.
Absolutely. Knock it out of the park. A brilliant article recently, Robin.
Which one would you be talking about? I mean, you know, I write so many.
Yeah, well, the Thousand Years of Liberty article, the monarchy article.
Oh, no, hold on. That's two articles. The monarchy one was the last one, and the one before that was the Thousand Years of Liberty. Yeah. The USA has a monarchy, let it have a glorious revolution.
It also had the Thousand Years of Liberty in it.
Well, I did mention that. You're right. Yeah. I did mention that. So let's see. I guess for listeners who missed our earlier discussion, you and I did this a few weeks ago, right? And we talked about it a little bit there. So the Thousand Years of Liberty thing is that in 1014, the first document of constitutional liberty was signed by Ethelred II in 1014. And so here we are in 2014, the heirs to a thousand-year tradition of political liberty. Obviously, you know, the ideas of liberty are older even than that, and have grown up independently in different parts of the world. But the Anglo tradition of political liberty, constitutional constraints on the exercise of power and government, that is 1,000 years old this year. You're right. And I've mentioned that in this last article, and indeed the article before that was all about that. And the last article, yeah, I was talking about the United States being a monarchy. And it's kind of funny to me that, well, it's not funny, it's kind of sad, this lack of appreciation that many Americans, I mean, this isn't an exclusively American thing, the Brits are as guilty of it about their history, but, you know, many Americans just seem to go no further than the founding myth when it comes to understanding their own history. And, of course, the founding myth was that the United States was founded in opposition to a tyrannical monarchy. And in a way, superficially, that was kind of true, but it wasn't really true. Because here we are now, and we have a president in 2014 who signs executive orders, who launches foreign wars without the approval of the representatives of the people, although we don't even call them wars, of course. We call them, what do we call them? That's kinetic military action, isn't it? I think the term was.
Actions.
Just kinetic military actions. Yeah, they're not wars. And and there's this massive use of agents, federal agents, under the auspices of the executive, the governing executive, that invade our privacy, you know, the NSA and all these kind of agencies, massively reaching into the private lives of the people. That's 2014. Now, the stereotypical caricatured tyrant for Americans is, of course, King George, you know, George III, from whom America supposedly won its liberty. Well, King George wasn't doing any of those things. He couldn't do any of those things. King George never signed an executive order in his life. In fact, The most recent executive order that any British monarch signed, you have to go back to King James in the 17th century, basically 100 years before the founding of the United States.
That's just wild.
Isn't it wild? And why is it that I think we don't want to see, we don't want to admit that we have a four-year elected monarchy in the United States, because it kind of defies the story that we tell ourselves about ourselves, right? About our founding. I mean, it would falsify our very kind of sense of identity if we actually allowed the possibility that we have created the very thing against which we defined ourselves. But I think we have. And, you know, and to be clear, a monarchy isn't typically an absolute monarch. It doesn't mean that one person wields all power. It just means that one person wields disproportionate power. And in pretty much every society has a monarch, but the question is, to what extent is that monarch constrained? And of course, the Constitution was written to massively constrain the American monarchy. You know what? We're going into a break, so we'll talk some more about this when we come back. I was talking about my recent article, The USA Has a Monarchy, Let It Have a Glorious Revolution, and I was just beginning to discuss what a monarch actually is. Alexander Hamilton said that monarch was an indefinite term. He said it marks not either the degree or duration of power. And so the fact that our king is elected for 4 years doesn't change his status as a monarch if he can wield disproportionate power, if he can sign executive orders and they in any way have the force of law. So the last king that actually tried that in England was King James II in the end of the 17th century. And the people of England, the parliamentarians of England, they weren't having that at all, and they got rid of him. And they got rid of him in what was called a glorious revolution, glorious because not a shot was fired. And they replaced James II, the tyrant who had overstepped his authority, so they thought, with William of Orange. And then they promptly locked William kind of into this position of constrained power, this constrained monarchy, with what was the original Bill of Rights. And in that original Bill of Rights, they stated that the pretended power of the execution of laws without the consent of Parliament, i.e. the representative body of the people, is illegal. And that the pretended power of dispensing with the laws or the execution of law by regal authority, think of signing statements nowadays, as it hath been assumed and exercised of late, so they said, is also illegal. So even in the 1680s, the Brits weren't having the exercise of monarchical power at a much lower level, much weaker exercise of power than the president does in the United States today. And yet we don't see that, because we in America, we can't allow that we have that monarchy, because what would it say about us? There we are, praising ourselves and our founding as against this, as I say, this caricature of a tyrannical monarch, whereas in fact we kind of have a very real one here.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, when I wrote that A few people rightly pointed out, well, we don't really have a monarchy, we have an oligarchy. Well, you know, that's true, of course. You know, it isn't a pure monarchy, it isn't an absolute monarchy. But, you know, monarchy, I think every society, every group has a disposition towards monarchy, to putting power, concentrating power to some extent in the hands of one leader, someone who has to take ultimate responsibility. And I'm not sure that's a bad thing. Actually, the Anglo-Saxons, going back to the beginning of this discussion, that 1,000 years of liberty, when the Anglo-Saxons, the Angles, came from what is now Germany to settle England, they brought with them really a minarchist society. They didn't have kings. I mean, they were as far away from monarchy as perhaps there has ever existed in our tradition, the Anglo tradition, of which the culmination was the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. But those Anglo-Saxons, once they'd settled England, they formed monarchs. They actually elected monarchs to help them defend themselves against all these invaders, you know, the Danes, the Norsemen, the Vikings. So it was a practical move. But even back then, so you're talking, you know, before the year 1000, the 800s, the 900s, etc., monarchy was limited. The Anglo-Saxon monarchy was limited. It was much more limited even then than our presidency is today in the United States. And by the way, this is nothing to do really with Obama or Bush or, you know, one or the other. It is a problem we have. It is a problem with the system. It's what we've given the office, what we allow the office to get away with. And it's an outrage.
Exactly. And then there's that conspiracy, right, that they actually are all related.
Oh, well,
part of the family. So.
Yeah, you know, I don't know much about that. I mean, obviously it's true that pretty much all the European monarchs and, you know, the royal families are related. But yes, a lot of people have a lot to say about the covert power and influence that European monarchs, indeed, including the Queen of England, exercise around the world. But, you know, actually, this is interesting too, because whereas the president can start a war pretty much on his own, can sign these executive orders, in Britain, there is nobody who can do that. The monarch certainly can't do that. And even the prime minister, who has the political power, can't do that as unilaterally as the American president. And it's kind of interesting, because if you take 1776 as the reference point, right, in terms of concentration of power in the hands of one man, America has slipped back to before the 1680s, as we've already seen. Whereas, in some ways, the tyrannical motherland, you know, Britain, has kind of continued in some ways to move forward in the direction that the Constitution was supposed to set America up to move, in as much as, you know, the Prime Minister, neither the Prime Minister nor the monarch, can wield this kind of monarchical power. So, you know, I really think that an appreciation of history, again, I mean, I've been saying this a lot recently, really would help us here in the United States to understand the nature of the slippage and to get us to think about, you know, why is it that this country with this sublime constitution, the highest expression of liberty in the Anglo tradition, you know, the American constitution, has slipped back. I.e., that constitution hasn't worked in some ways, whereas England, that doesn't have a written constitution, hasn't slipped back in the same way. Certainly not with respect to the concentration of power in the hands of a monarch. What is that about? It speaks to something about something of the fact that the political rules are not enough if they don't operate within a certain cultural context. And I think people who are interested in liberty, you know, libertarians, we need to think more about, you know, what is it about American culture that means that the American Constitution and the best of the American political institutions aren't doing what they were founded to do.
Exactly. I've been saying for a while that we need to change our culture and our media first, and we're docile, huh?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that's interesting.
The Hostile Bunch.
Yeah.
I loved watching the footage of the Ukrainian protesters. That's how it's done.
Why do you think that is, Zach? Why are we so docile? Do you think we're just you know, too comfortable in our own success and easy life?
I think it's beyond that. I think in school, you're sat down and you're made to listen to your teacher, your authority figure, and, mm-hmm. and that continues, right? So I think it's the way we're raised. I think that's a lot by design.
Yeah. There certainly is a respect for authority in the United States that you don't see or feel in the United Kingdom, for example. I mean, I'll speak to the UK because obviously that's what I know. There seems to be a kind of a cultural disposition in England whereby if somebody wants power, the very fact that they're even interested in it, they are probably not to be trusted. So the initial disposition towards anybody in power or to any political office is one of cynicism and distrust. Whereas here, I think people are much more respectful, actually. Americans are much more respectful of political office, of power, and of those who wield power. There's a default trust in authority. It's kind of a more honorable society in that respect, you know what I mean? Or a society in which there's more of a sense of honor, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and it's gotten us in trouble.
Well, it doesn't seem to be working too well right now, does it?
No, it doesn't.
I mean, you know, I think you've heard me mention before, I always kind of find it interesting, you mentioned about the giveaway of that rifle earlier, right? Yeah, a lot of people rightly say that the whole point of us having the Second Amendment, of us being armed, is to be able to protect our rights, ultimately, against a tyrannical government. And, oh, you know what? We'll talk about that. We're going into a break. We'll talk about it when we come back. This is Robin Kerner, the original Blue Republican, talking to my friend Zach Carter. How are we doing, Zach?
Really good. I just popped a Rainier.
You see, everyone, Zach is doing this interview with beer. That's the depressant. I'm doing it with tea. That's the stimulant, you see. And being English, English-born, I always am doing pretty much everything with my tea. And it seems to work for us, right?
And I disagree with the depressant. Beer makes me happy.
Well, of course. You know, technically it's depressant. Chemically it's a depressant, but it doesn't really depress anyone, does it? Yeah, definitely not.
Yeah, as Benjamin Franklin said, loosely paraphrased, beer is proof that God wants us to be happy.
There you go. We're getting a little bit religious there on... Blue Republican Radio. You know what? I want to just carry on that thought because we were talking about the thought from before we went into the break about how docile. You don't think it's all the beer, do you, that makes the Americans? I don't think so. They don't drink that much beer. How docile that we are in the face of our loss of liberties, you know?
What? We don't drink that much beer?
I don't think we do as a nation. Do we? Do Americans drink? I don't think we drink copious quantities of beer. Not like even the English. You know, go to the center of a town on a Friday
Irish
night.
Irish American.
You what?
Speak for yourself. I'm Irish American.
Oh, well, look, if you're Irish American, maybe you're not representative, because I know the Irish can drink. Ain't that true?
Yeah. And, you know, I live in a liberal state, and I was also told that... Well, so do you, but I was told that people in liberal states tend to drink more.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Well, all I know is that as a Brit, you know, I unfortunately got used to seeing men and women just paralytic, you know, falling out of pub doorways on Friday nights and Saturday nights, vomiting on the street, you know, can't put a coherent sentence together, that whole thing.
Yeah, well, we should do that.
We should, well, but we don't do that in America, not a lot. Maybe I've been missing it, but, you know, I used to live in New York. I used to go down to, you know, that part of New York, that of the city that never sleeps on a Friday or Saturday night, but I didn't see that. I didn't see anything that ugly, you know. So maybe in this respect, Americans are just a bit more civilized. I don't think Americans do drink as much as...
I've had a lot of that, Robin.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, maybe I'm just saying more about the circles I move in then.
It was definitely when I was younger. But
okay.
But also when I was in the service, definitely had you know, a lot of crazy nights when I was in the Army.
Okay.
It involved way too much alcohol. Keg stands,
right?
Yeah, beer bongs.
So maybe what you're saying here is you drink just as much in America, but you keep it behind closed doors more because it doesn't pour down the street in the same way.
I've done keg stands on the beach.
Okay.
And
were people vomiting?
I don't know if I threw up that night.
You see, because that's like the threshold, you know.
And then we need to take you to Savannah, Georgia for St. Patty's Day.
Nah, yeah.
500,000 people drunk on River Street.
Okay.
Right on the Savannah River.
Well, I will certainly admit that as a new American, I have a lot to learn. You know, I'm very open to that, and I'm very open to learning it.
We're going out this weekend. Is it this weekend or next weekend?
One after, yeah, I think, isn't it?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Show me how it's done American style, eh?
I guess
I'm just a lightweight.
We're in Seattle. Robin and I will be in a pub crawl at Capitol Hill.
You know, but you know, because I'm such a lightweight, a pub crawl for me is 2 beers, 3 at a push. Like, that's a night for me, you know.
I guess we're going to have to find a young woman to convince you to drink more.
Now. You've got us distracted from the how do we get on to it? We were talking about Americans being docile. So but we're not actually putting down our lack of civil disobedience to drinking too much, are we?
I don't think so.
No.
It's the way we're taught to respect authority.
Yeah.
Classroom. I think it starts in the classroom. The government runs schools. We need to do more homeschooling and more alternatives to government education.
Well, so tell me, I never been to an American school. What are the ways that you're taught to respect authority in an American public school?
Well, if you don't, you're getting detention, which is
Same everywhere, isn't it?
I would imagine. Go to the principal's office.
Yeah, that's the same. I mean, that's the same in England too. But the English are still a much more cynical bunch that don't respect anybody in authority very much.
Maybe it's your sense of humor.
Yeah, I don't know. Huh. Yeah, all right, well...
We'll have to do a detailed study on what causes this difference.
Oh yeah, well, that's definitely it's. I think it's like one of the biggest differences between the cultures. I mean, and it's really interesting to me because, you know, I'm all about how the United States is kind of politically very much like the culmination of the Anglo tradition, this tradition of liberty that grew up in the motherland in England. But I shouldn't say even in England, in Britain. But yeah, this attitude towards authority, which is a cultural thing rather than a political thing, is one of the biggest differences between, you know, the country of my birth and my adopted country of the United States. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I also wanted to, you know, because I've got this radio show now, right, which is going really well, and thanks to all the listeners who have been regularly listening, we're getting most of our listeners are actually downloading this as a podcast, which is great, and I'm hoping to get the more accurate numbers soon. But I guess because I have this platform, I should really be using it to talk about what we're doing at Blue Republican, right?
Exactly, since this is Blue Republican Radio.
It is Blue Republican Radio. And, so the chapters are, you know, the state chapters and the city chapters are slowly popping up around the place. And I'm very excited that a few days after this show will go out, we will have, our first conference call with our current batch of chapter leaders. I think we're on like 10 or 12 chapters now. And so this is kind of exciting for me because we're going to kind of plug everyone into each other, start that kind of feeling of community. We've got chapters in like Colorado, California, Tennessee, New Jersey, Houston. It's all over the place. But everyone's kind of just begun to set things up in their own little silos in their own parts of the country. So I want to wire it all together, start sharing, having people who are involved in Blue Republican sharing what they're doing so you don't have different people reinventing the wheel. And I'm just really excited to see other volunteers kind of running with this, effectively this political franchise that we've got going here, and leveraging it in their communities, in their states, in support of good candidates, important local liberty-related issues. So this is kind of really taking the whole Blue Republican thing, I hope, to the next level. It's really good.
It needs to. It's such a powerful idea, tool to wake people up to liberty.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really excited by what's happened, and I'm just going to take this opportunity, Zach, to thank you again, because you were that first year of this. Although I think you got me 60 radio interviews.
I think you grow it by multiple numbers every time you say it.
Every time I say what?
Every time you say how many interviews I got through, I think it was
I usually say around 50, but actually I'm sure it was nearer 60. In any case, it was a big number for 1 year.
Well, I am the Forrest Gump of Liberty.
You are the Forrest Gump of Liberty, yes, whose services I had the benefit from, extensively back then in 2011, 2012.
And I've been trying to get you to have a radio show for a while, so thank you.
I know, right? You and I had talked about that, and I said I wouldn't be just another person with a Liberty podcast, because there really are hundreds of them, and lots of them have an average audience of, 15. And I with the whole Blue Republican thing and writing, it can take me 8 hours to write an article. That's not unusual. So I've been putting in all this work, all this time, which I'm not getting paid for, and at some point you just have to say, okay, I just can't spend more time doing things that I don't know will have a positive result if they're not paying me. So I resisted doing a radio show unless somebody came forward and kind of gave me a platform with, if not a ready-made audience, easy access to a large audience. And sure enough, thanks to Daily Pool Radio and the awesome Alison Bricker, who you can also hear on this station, that actually happened just before Christmas last year. And and here we are now, I don't know what, we're 7, 8, 9 shows in, and I was starting this with an old $15 headset when I began doing Skype calls to people, and I think the sound quality was pretty poor. But now I've got this professional mic, I've got this mixer thing going on. Took me days to work out how to use it. So we're really doing this thing. It's really happening.
Yeah. Robin to the next level.
We're working on it, and I appreciate all your help in that. Actually, another thing that I was doing recently, another little Blue Republican thing, was this journalism masterclass. I did this journalism masterclass, just an intimate class, just like the five of us. Give people, make it interactive, give people the chance to ask questions.
Yeah, and how'd that go?
Really well. It was experimental. I mean, you can imagine, I spent a long time putting the materials together. But it went really well. I got a lot of good feedback, and a few people came forward and said, oh, they would like to have done it, and you know they couldn't make that first one. So I think I'm going to do another one. So let me just take this opportunity to say, if you're interested in setting up a Blue Republican chapter in your state or major city, go to bluerepublican.org and apply to do the same. And also look out for the next invitation that I put out to do a political journalism masterclass. And for what it's worth, it was the free market of ideas that decided that, you know, my writing, my political writing was worthwhile, was effective. And it's been really interesting for me to kind of go back now. So I've been writing for about 3 years since then. That was at the kind of the beginning of my quote career unquote as a political writer, that original Blue Republican article that launched this whole thing with your help and with the help of Israel Anderson and other people. So it's interesting now for me to kind of look back at that article and other articles that I've written to see actually what works in terms of persuading an audience, a readership. You know, what actually does begin to convert the unconverted, which is what I'm interested in. And so I kind of was analyzing a lot of my own work and other effective political writing. And it was really interesting. The class, I thought it would be between an hour or two, and we ended up running 3 hours. It was actually great. But I actually felt pretty good about that, because that meant all of the students who paid $30, they all got, you know, more bang for their buck. They were getting paying $10 an hour for what I was told afterwards was good content. So I had a lot of fun doing it, and I look forward to doing it again. And actually, some of the ideas in that political journalism masterclass, some of them will be going into a series of presentations that I am going to be giving, I hope, more and more often, alongside Michael Pickens, who was my guest in the last show. I'm going to be speaking along with some big names at the Libertarian Party of Washington State annual conference in May. One of the big names being Gary Johnson, but also Judge Jim Gray, who's also a fantastic speaker. So it's going to be an honor for me to share a stage with them. And I think we're going to have quite a lot of, it's going to be quite a big audience. The LP is really, in my state, in Washington State, is really doing a good job in increasing its representation on the ballot, increasing its membership. I think that's going to be reflected in the audience on May the 31st here in Seattle. But the day after that, on June the 1st, Michael and I are going to be actually giving a series of classes, seminars for activists and candidates of the libertarian persuasion. So I've been giving a lot of lectures all around the world, but this is going to be the first time where I'm developing material specifically for pro-liberty American activists. So I'm really excited to be getting into this, because of course this is right in line with what I want to do with Blue Republican.
Have you hit every, well, other than Antarctica, have you hit every continent now with your liberty teachings?
Good question.
Have you done Africa?
You know, I haven't done Africa. I haven't. The organization that I travel with to do this, though, they are increasingly working in Africa. I haven't personally joined them for one of their camps in Africa. Mozambique, they've done quite a bit of work in Mozambique, in particular. Where have I been? I've been to Poland, Kyrgyzstan, Slovakia, Brazil. We did a fantastic one with the Cuban dissident community in Florida, actually, which is very interesting. I've been getting around a bit, and I might well be going to Malta and Georgia and Armenia this year, which would be also fantastic. So we'll see. And actually, you know what's really excellent? We have a Blue Republican chapter in Poland. There is Blue Republican Polska is a thing.
That's just extremely cool.
Isn't that cool? I mean, who would have even thought that the Blue Republican kind of approach would be relevant in Poland? It was actually, you know what? We're going into a break, so
we'll
be back soon.
We'll be right back.
lovely people for staying with me for another hour. Blue Republican Radio for the Liberty Curious. We've just got 2 minutes to close the show. I should say, if there's anybody out there who has a company, some product they would like to advertise, Blue Republican Radio is now looking for sponsors and advertisers, and we're getting significant numbers of listeners. So it may be in your interest to, maybe in our mutual interest, for you to get in touch with me through Blue Republican Radio. Go to BlueRepublican.org and get in touch with me. You can always get in touch with me on the Blue Republican Facebook group. That's facebook.com/BlueRepublican. I'm going to be talking to Matt Shea before very long. He's going to be a guest coming up on the show. And he's one of the very best pro-liberty representatives in Washington State. And I'm hoping to get from him an inside view of, you know, what kind of shenanigans he has to deal with as a pro-liberty, an effective pro-liberty legislator up here in the blue state of Washington. Follow me at R. Koerner, that's R-K-O-E-R-N-E-R. Follow Blue Rep, that's B-L-U-E-R-E-P. That's on Twitter, of course. And go to BlueRepublican.org to see if there is a Blue Republican chapter in your city or state. And if not, check us out. Certainly check out that original Blue Republican article from, what is it now, nearly 3 years ago. And see if this is something that you'd like to be part of. We're not just interested in the philosophy of liberty. We're interested in selling it and marketing it in a way that is attractive to those who may not otherwise choose to expose themselves to the kind of ideas that we are really into. Zach, thanks for being with me for another hour.
Oh, you bet. Always a pleasure, my friend.
Now, I think we just got a few seconds. Anything you want to plug before we go into the break? Or into the end of the show, I should say?
Yeah, people can go to benswan.com and sign up to win a rifle.
There you go. Win a rifle and help yourself protect the Second Amendment, and in so doing, all of the other ones, right?
You got it. You got it.
You know, I was going to talk a little bit about that, but we haven't got time, so I guess that'll be for another show now.
All good.
Yeah. And of course, look out for the next Political Journalism Masterclass, too. I'll be posting that on the Facebook group. All right. Thank you, Zach. Thank you all. Thanks for being with me. You have a great week, everyone. Take care. Bye.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times, WGRR Digital.